Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, we'll meet portrait artist Cecile Well of Fort Madison. This Parisian artist came to Iowa for love and ended up falling in love with our state and the Mississippi River. But first, we are going to meet the new Iowa Poet Laureate. Deborah Marquardt is a distinguished professor of liberal arts and sciences at Iowa State University. She also teaches at the Stone Coast MFA program at the University of Southern Maine. She is the author of 6 books, including poetry, short stories, and memoir. She's also a singer-songwriter. Her band is called The Bone People, and she is with me now. Hello, Deb.
Hello, Charity. How are you this morning?
Great. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
And congratulations.
Thanks so much. I'm really thrilled.
What is the process for becoming the Poet Laureate of Iowa? When did you first realize this was a possibility?
It's been about a year-long process. Of course, we have a really great Poet Laureate already in the state, Mary Swander.
Yes, we're going to hear from her in just a little while.
Yeah, she's been so active and she's done such a great job as Laureate. And I believe it was around last summer that Humanities Iowa announced the fairly new process in which they just sort of sent out a call for nominations. And I was contacted by a few people around the state asking me if it'd be okay if they would nominate me. And I said, you know, of course, I'd be honored. And so it's a fairly elaborate process, but nominations are taken in. And then there's a kind of deliberative body that looks at the nominees and then narrows it down to a list of 3. And those 3 names are sent on to the governor. And then, of course, it's an appointment, so the governor makes the final decision. So I was notified, maybe about a month and a half ago, and it was really hard to keep it a secret.
And I'm sure that you have a whole lot of things going on. So did it come almost as a surprise when you actually got the news?
The timing was, it was complicated because it was during finals week when they finally made the state made the announcement. And so I sort of got this huge flood of emails, all of them welcome, of course, people celebrating. And it's really fun when something like this happens. People come out of the woodwork that you haven't heard from for years. And, one realizes how much community matters and how much we're a part of a really large community.
And I'm sure you were trying to grade papers.
I was.
Well, it is exciting. And you had to keep it a secret for a while. How did you do it keeping it a secret?
I didn't do a very good job of it. I told a lot of people. And then I said, but don't tell anybody and don't put it on Facebook. And so it was a bit of an open secret, I think. Fortunately, no one put it on Facebook, so the state was able to make the announcement.
To make it Facebook official.
Yes.
So we will talk more about what it means to be Poet Laureate, what your plans are, and we'll hear from Mary Swander about what her tenure mm-hmm. yeah. has been like as the Iowa Poet Laureate. I'm sure she also has some advice to share as well. But let's talk about you first. You have been at Iowa State University for quite a while now, but becoming a distinguished professor was not your original plan. You grew up in North Dakota and you wanted to be a rock star, right?
Well, of course, who didn't in the 1970s? I'm writing a book about this right now. Finally, it's taken me quite a few years to begin to broach this story of the fire and losing everything in a fire. But I was, I was living a life as a on-the-road rock musician. I had dropped out of college, Morehead State University. I needed 2 classes to graduate. I don't recommend this to anyone, really. It was not a great life plan. But I just knew that I wanted to do something, different and something creative with my life. So I just joined kind of a bad country western band and went on the road. And I played for about 6 months with this band. We played Holiday Inns and, so in the morning I went to, woke up in a Holiday Inn bed. In the afternoon I sat by Holiday Inn pool, and at night I, played in a Holiday Inn club, and I thought I had it made.
The rock and roll lifestyle.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so, you know, one band led to another, And in 1980, my my own band, kind of a progressive hard rock band, we lost everything in a truck fire. And so that was...
So it's like the van that you were driving around in, carrying all of your equipment, your instruments, started on fire and everything was lost?
Well, we were a really big band. So our band, the band members traveled in a separate van, and our road crew took our big truck. And it was our truck that burned. So fortunately, our crew was safe. That was ultimately the real blessing. But all the equipment burned. And, you know, it was just a freak accident. Of course, we didn't have any insurance at all. Who would insure a rock and roll band? So it was a real turning point. I felt, even at the time, I felt it was a correction in my life. It was like the ancestors saying, maybe you thought you were going this direction, but you're really going to go this direction. And I didn't know at the time what that was. You know, I felt I was at the bottom of a very deep well. I was trying to imagine what I was going to do with the rest of my life because I felt so stalled out and destroyed. And, you know, leveled, really leveled. So it was kind of at that moment the writing stepped in, a piece of paper and a pen, doesn't cost anything. And that's how I started writing.
Did you go back to school?
I did.
I mean, eventually, obviously, but was that sort of the, okay, I have to take the more trodden path?
I did. I went back to school, finished those two classes. One of them was a statistics course, so maybe that was why, you know, I was resisting. I was working on a social work major, and I knew that that wasn't the right major for me. So that was part of it. And so I went back and finished that degree, and then I started doing more coursework and immediately started taking literature courses because I had always been an avid reader. When I was a road musician, I was just telling my mom this the other day, I always had a big bag of shoes and a big bag of books. That's what I took on the road with me. And so I was an avid reader. But then when I came off the road, I had a lot of stories to tell. So I started writing those and taking classes at Morehead State where I went to undergrad, but then I continued and got a graduate degree there and really started writing in a more disciplined way.
I would love for you to read something for us. We'll talk more about your trajectory in a moment, but I also want people to get a little taste of the kind of poetry that you write. And I know you brought a couple of new poems with you. Can you pick one of them to read?
These are both kind of sad. I was looking at these thinking, okay, so my poems, my new poems are a little bit, a little sadder and more introspective. But this is a poem about just driving on the interstate. I've gotten to the point where I feel this intense sadness whenever I see an animal on the side of the road. And in this case, it was a red-tailed hawk. It's called Even on a Sunday Drive. Even on a Sunday drive, it's possible to break your heart. This smear on the freeway, a jumble of feathers, checkered, dark, against a mottled white breast. Hard to mistake the rufous brown, the upturned spray of red tail feathers, edged with black. Strange to see the moment when the efficient killer meets the greater death, the blow dealt by a speeding car just seconds ahead. It's better to pity the mice, voles, and rabbits, the snakes and tiny warmbloods who scuttle in short grass under swift talons. But the outlines of these hawks in winter, perched on bare branches like frumpy Winston Churchills officiating the cold ditches and medians of the highway in topcoat and tails, always makes me laugh. And the presence of the smaller female landed and turning circles in the emergency lane 2 miles up the road, staring backwards with that look, where is he? Makes me remember that hawks incubate their eggs in cooperative pairs, mate for life, and build nests like upturned bowls of sticks to hold their young. Which makes me want to stop the car, bend my forehead to the pavement, and whisper, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, forgive me. But the locked traffic pushes me forward, and 3 miles later, another distraction. A rider truck encased in blazes of fire across the median. The contents are flaming poker hot against the horizon. Already sirens are approaching in the distance, and three humans circle the catastrophe.
Deborah Marcourt reading her poem, Even on a Sunday Drive. Deborah Marcourt, our new Iowa Poet Laureate. You became a poet, and I know it wasn't a straight pathway, but and you're also still a singer-songwriter. Do you find that writing poetry came naturally to you as a musician, as a songwriter?
That was a really natural transition. As a singer, I really started as a singer. I grew up in a very small town in North Dakota. We didn't have creative writing teachers or even art teachers, so music was everywhere. I came from a very musical family, and you know, in my memoir, I disclosed that I'm actually related to Lawrence Welk. So there's a great musical tradition in my family. So I always loved song lyrics, and when I was in high school, I wrote those really bad kind of boyfriend poems and notebooks and copied song lyrics.
We all did.
Yes. And so it was a natural progression. I had been studying. You know, when you sing, you learn a lyric, a song lyric, and then there's a process of taking it into your body. And, you know, as the saying goes, learning it by heart, which is really taking it into your blood and in your heart and into your breath. And so I had absorbed all of that knowledge about song lyrics from being a singer all my life and being a performing musician. And so when I began writing, then all that knowledge, you know, about cadence and tone and phrasing, that all, and efficiency, you know, song lyrics have great efficiency of phrase, bringing all that over to poetry. So poetry was really my first literary genre, but then again, you know, I had a lot of stories. I knew a lot of interesting people. A lot of strange things happened. And I then gravitated to prose in order to bump out my sense of expression about the stories I had to tell. But poetry is always, you know, my sort of home base. It's always the place I go back to.
I'm talking with Deborah Marcourt. She is our new Iowa Poet Laureate and a distinguished professor of liberal arts and sciences at Iowa State University, also the author of 6 books. She also performs with a band. She's still a singer-songwriter and performs with the Bone People. We'll go out with just a little taste of their Firefly Nights.
Didn't miss the deep cold, didn't miss the 20 belows, miss the fields of sunflowers, I miss the northern lights. This new place is...
Of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. With me now is Deborah Marcourt. She is our new Iowa Poet Laureate. She is also a distinguished professor of liberal arts and sciences at Iowa State University. She teaches at the Stone Coast MFA program at the University of Southern Maine. She's also the author of 6 books, including poetry, short stories, and memoir. She is a singer-songwriter and performs with the band The Bone People. And in just a few minutes, our outgoing Poet Laureate, Mary Swan, is also going to join us. But Deb, before we bring Mary into the conversation, would you choose something else to read to us?
Of course. Maybe I'll read this poem. This is a poem about growing up in North Dakota and on the farm. And, you know, guns were everywhere. They were just sort of stocked, you know, on the stocks on the side of the mudroom. And this is about a very close call that our family had with a gun. It's called Kablooey is the sound you'll hear. Kablooey is the sound you'll hear, then plaster falling and the billow of gypsum, after your sister blows a hole in the ceiling of your brother's bedroom with the shotgun he left loaded and resting on his dresser. It's Saturday, and the men are in the fields. You and your sister are cleaning house with your mother. Maybe your sister hates cleaning that much, or maybe she's just that thorough. But somehow she has lifted the gun to dust it or dust under it. You are busy mopping the stairs. And from the top landing where you stand, you turn toward the sound to see your sister cradling the smoking shotgun in her surprised arms, like a beauty queen clutching a bouquet of long-stemmed roses after being pronounced the official winner. Then the smell of burnt gunpowder reaches you, dirty orange and sulfurous, like spent fireworks. And through the veil of smoke, you see a hole smoldering above her head, a halo of perforations in the ceiling. The drywall blown clean through insulation to the naked joists, that dark constellation where the buckshot spread. The look on your sister's face is pure shock. You'd like to stop and photograph it for blackmail or future family stories. But now you must focus on the face of your mother, frozen there at the base of the stairs, where she has rushed from vacuuming or waxing, her frantic eyes searching your face for some clue about the extent of the catastrophe. But it's like that heavy quicksand dream, where you can't move or speak. So your mother scrambles up the steps, on all fours rushes past you to the room, where your sister has just now found her voice, already screaming her story. It just went off! It just went off! As if a shotgun left to rest on safety would rise and fire itself. All this will be hashed and rehashed around the supper table. But what stays with you all these years later, what you cannot forget, is that moment when your mother waited at the bottom of the steps for a word from you. One word. And all you could offer her was silence.
That's Kablooey is the Sound You'll Hear, a poem written by Deborah Marquardt. And that was included in your book, Small Buried Things.
Yes.
And then also recently anthologized in Bullets into Bells, Poets and Citizens Respond to Gun Violence. Deb, with all of the teaching that you do, both in Iowa and in Maine, how do you find time for your own creation?
Oh, that's such a good question. I write between the cracks a lot, the cracks of other obligations. And I think I'm one of those writers who, I don't know what I would do if I had big blocks of time. I'd probably just eat bonbons and watch soap operas or something, because I've been busy and kind of oversubscribed my whole life. Right now, I'm really looking for some unobstructed time, because I'm working on two big, very complicated manuscripts. But generally with poems, I keep a notebook. I'm sort of always putting ideas in there. And I can often work late at night. So often I wake in the middle of the night with a line or an idea, and I have to get up and work on it. And my dogs are always unhappy about that.
We're trying to sleep.
I know.
So in being named the Iowa Poet Laureate, from your perspective, obviously that's another thing that's going to require your time and your energy. But what does it mean?
Oh, it means, you know, it means the world to me. I'm from North Dakota, and that's my first home. But Iowa is the place that gave me a home as an adult and allowed me to shape myself as a professional and make so much work, you know, do so much hopefully good work in the world in terms of literature and expression and creativity, not only with music but also literature. And I've often said that Iowa is a place, when I arrived here, it just kept saying yes to me. Every time I thought I would leave, it said, yes, stay a little bit longer, do this now and stay longer. And so I'm so grateful for the, you know, for the honor and the opportunity to, you know, get to some corners of the state and talk about creativity with the people of Iowa.
Are you largely responsible for deciding what you will do with this role, or is there a program that you'll be following?
I think I'd like to tap into some already existing programs. And you know, Mary Swander, again, I mean, she's done so much work to establish the presence of the Laureate and, you know, the various activities. She's been incredibly active and done so many different things, not only with poetry, but theater and music and puppet theater. And so, you know, I could only hope to follow in her footsteps. There is an existing program, the Poetry Out Loud program. And I've talked with the Iowa Arts Council people about that, about maybe dovetailing with that to try to go into the high schools a bit and get more students around the state interested in the Poetry Out Loud program. It's a competition that starts at the high school level and then comes to the state and then goes to the national level. And that's something I would like to do. And I'd also like to get into some of the more rural communities. Maybe go, you know, to small towns, teach creative writing workshops, and reach out to some underserved populations in the urban settings in Iowa, as well as some of the rural reaches of the state.
This is a 2-year appointment?
It is, yeah.
All right. And Mary Swander, I want to bring you into the conversation. Now, Mary Swander is our outgoing poet laureate. She has served as a poet laureate since 2009. So that 2-year appointment either didn't exist or they just kept bringing you back. Mary Swander is also a poet and a playwright. She's the artistic director of Swander Woman Productions and the executive director of Ag Arts. Mary, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you.
Let's see. We'll get you. Try that again.
Oh,
we seem to be having a little microphone trouble.
Oh,
I'm going to switch you over to this blue microphone here. All right. Sorry about that.
Hello. Hello.
There you
Hi,
are.
Mary.
Okay. Loud and clear.
All right. Hi, Mary. How are you?
Hi there. Hi, Deb.
So, Mary, as I said, you became Iowa Poet Laureate back in 2009, and you and Deb have so many things in common, having both taught at Iowa State University. Both of you are musicians. Both of you are poets. Back when you became the Iowa Poet Laureate, tell me how you envisioned that role.
Well, it's important to point out that it's not a paid position, which is which was that most people assume it is. And so, but you know, that also offers a lot of freedom. So you just invent your role by yourself. And so I jumped in and did several projects. I was really dedicated to doing poetry with people with disabilities. And so I worked with the Department of the Blind. I worked with the School for the Deaf. And then I started a free creative writing class for people with disabilities. Those were some of my initial projects. And I think, you know, some of the best things that I did.
And you mentioned it's not a paid position. Did you have support, financial support for the programs you started?
Absolutely none.
Okay.
Yeah. And you know, I would apply for grants, and then they would tell me, take that out of your poet laureate stipend. And I'm like, somehow we've got signals crossed here. And so I just plowed ahead. And mostly I financed things out of my own pocket.
Well, thank you for being our poet laureate, Mary. Deb, that has to make you really excited about it.
Now, I have to say, I did have a lot of, emotional support from a lot of people throughout the state. So that was really, really great. And you are on the Iowa Speakers Bureau from the Humanities Iowa department. And that's very nice. That's a very nice bonus. And so, as Deb said, you know, you go to a lot of places. I would like to put a plug in for the libraries in the state of Iowa. Mm-hmm. And they are fantastic. Librarians are my heroes in this state. And they wear so many hats. And people think that everything's online now. Why do we need libraries? But that's really, I mean, they are, you know, a reservoir of information, resources. They're a community center in many of these towns, and they do all of this great programming. So
in many ways, it sounds like being poet laureate opened doors for you, but you had to push them the rest of the way.
No, that's right. And, you know, and it's really cool to see how many people are in this state, in little tiny nooks and crannies of this state, are interested in poetry and the literary arts and really want some guidance, you know, about it. I thought it was so rewarding to walk into a library in a small town and there'd be a group gathered around the table and they'd say, teach us how to scan a line. I'm like, okay, now we're talking. You know, they weren't interested in fluff at all. They really wanted to know how, you know, poetry worked. I thought it was great.
Well, that's exciting. And I mean, both of you as professors at Iowa State, of course, you had many students come into your class who may have taken your class for whatever reason, maybe not necessarily because they loved poetry. But I mean, Deb, you've gotten the opportunity to watch so many students over the years really fall in love with this kind of work.
That's true. And Mary and I have spoken about this quite a few times, but at Iowa State, you know, it's a science and technology university, and so one would assume, oh, there are not, you know, people who are just rabidly interested in poetry, but it's quite the contrary. And our poetry workshops fill up within minutes of the classes opening. And we always have, you know, microbiologists and design students and animal ecologists. And, you know, they're just wonderful writers because they have this disciplinary knowledge that they bring to poems. And I find them to be very passionate about poetry. And, you know, and they take it very seriously. I think poetry has a sort of nourishment nugget inside of it. It feeds the inner life, and increasingly what we get in the outside world, you know, in the media, is it doesn't feed that part of our sort of spirits. And so I see students every day responding in that way to poetry.
It was funny listening to you talk about taking literature classes when you went back to school. It sounds like that it wasn't your focus, but it was where you really found yourself. Have you seen a lot of students take that pathway where maybe they're doing something just because they think it will be fun, but then that's where they find themselves?
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, we see this kind of conversion over to writing and literature almost on a daily basis, because students realize they might be going into a field in advertising or in the sciences, but writing is this absolutely essential skill. If I think back to my own writing teachers, you know, the things that they taught me, I use every single day, not just because I'm a writer, but as a professional. So I think of what we teach as not a luxury at all. Poetry is not a luxury at all. It's an absolutely essential kind of hardwiring for efficiency of expression.
Which is not necessarily how a lot of people see poetry. it becomes, for so many people, it's extra, or it's an extracurricular idea, something that you could do in addition to the important things in your life. Mary, have you seen any kind of change in how people see poetry during your tenure?
Oh, yeah. No, that, you know, Steve's identified some of the students at Iowa State are the most important members of my consciousness. They, I get calls from former students all the time, or emails. And my favorite story is a guy who graduated and went into the service, and he ended up bombing Kosovo. And he said, "When I was up in the air dropping bombs, I thought of you." And I'm like, "Oh, brother." And and he said, "No, I thought of your class, and you taught me to really do something that I cared about and that was important. And that wasn't poetry, but I came back and started a used car business." And I'm like, "No, what? I don't follow this." And he said, "Well," and then I hired all refugees to work in my business. And now, actually, he's a minister. And so that, you know, that's not, you know, publishing a book of poetry and being in POBIZ, as we call it, but it's what I was trying to teach in the classroom.
Okay, first, do you really call it POBIZ?
oh, yes, that's the buzzword, yeah, POBIZ.
Okay.
Yeah, some people do.
But that is interesting, because it does show us how poetry can touch us in so many ways and inform our thinking,
right,
no matter what biz we go into.
Right, right. I mean, you know that in that class, they're not all going to end up being published poets. Some of them do, but to have the consciousness and the reward of doing something that means something in one's life, I think, is a big bonus.
Something that strikes me in talking to both of you is how much initiative you've both had to take in creating your own opportunities, your own careers, in addition to the work that you've done with universities, but in creating these opportunities to bring poetry, to bring other kind of creative work to people all around the country. And I'm curious, Deb, what drives you to keep going at that? It must be exhausting.
I think it's just improvisation. I think creative people, whether, you know, we're, you know, clothing designers or poets or, you know, builders of buildings, you know, we're makers. And so makers are always problem solving. Makers are always thinking about what's around them and what they can make of it, you know. And so for me, it's just I constantly get lines from poems and I see something that somebody says and it just stays with me, it haunts me, and I just write it down and collect and collect and collect until things kind of begin to coalesce into a poem or an essay or a story or a song. And I think there's just something inside of those of us who are makers that, you know, we just have that impulse to collect and gather and put things together.
Well, Deborah Marquardt, thank you so much for talking with me today. Deborah Marquardt is a distinguished professor of liberal arts and sciences at Iowa State University. She is also the new Iowa Poet Laureate, and Mary Swander is our outgoing Poet Laureate. Mary, thank you so much for being our Poet Laureate and for talking with me today.
Oh, thank you, Charity.
Mary Swander is a poet and playwright, the artistic director of Swander Woman Productions, and the executive director of Ag Arts, and she served as Iowa's Poet Laureate from 2009 to today. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.